Failure is not fatal, the familiar saying goes, but it expresses an important biblical truth, a truth that we find illustrated in our study for this morning, Acts chapter 15, verses 36 to 41. You see, God is preparing us for greater usefulness through our weaknesses and our disappointments and our failures. He uses these for His glory and His purposes. The setting of our passage is it follows the Jerusalem Council, where an important doctrinal decision was made by the early church. And it introduces the second missionary journey. We read in Acts 15, verse 36, "Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, 'Let us go back and visit the brothers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they are doing.'" Concern for the spiritual welfare of the churches prompts this desire to return. One writer put it this way: "The work of Christian mission is not merely one of founding new churches. Young congregations, like young Christians, must be carefully nurtured." In verse 37, we read, "Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them. But Paul did not think it wise to take him because he had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work." Barnabas, whose actual name is Joseph, Barnabas is the nickname given him by the apostles in Acts chapter 4 and verse 36, and it means son of encouragement. He was a Levite from Cyprus. When you saw Barnabas coming toward you, you knew that you were about to be encouraged. He's generous, he's gracious, and he wants to give Mark a second chance. Acts 13:13 tells us that an earlier time on the first missionary journey, Mark deserted Paul and Barnabas. We're not told the reason for his desertion, but it concerned Paul. And while Barnabas wanted to take Mark on this second missionary journey, Paul, verse 38 tells us, did not think it wise to take him because he had deserted with them and had not continued with them in the work. The discussion was extended. The imperfect verbs in Greek express that for us. As the great Greek scholar A.T. Robertson said, "Barnabas willed, wished, and stuck to it." But Paul was just as insistent as Barnabas. And so the discussion went on. Paul's reasons are principal, not personal. The work was difficult. He did not want someone with them who was unstable, unreliable, possibly even disloyal. And so it led to a sharp disagreement, verse 39 tells us. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took John Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left, commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. This had become a serious problem. The word sharp disagreement is the translation of a Greek word which means to be provoked, to be stirred up, to be aroused. An angry dispute, one writer said, a fight, another. Originally, the word meant to sharpen as of a blade. It signified sharp words and lost tempers. In other words, the sparks flew. The same word is used in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 24. "Let us consider how we may spur," there's our word, "one another on to love and good deeds." We get our English word paroxysm from this word, meaning to excite or to sharpen, a sudden burst as of laughter or rage or sneezing, a fit or a spasm. This was a serious disagreement and a serious problem between these two who had worked side by side in the work of the gospel. They had handled the doctrinal dispute just fine, but this personal dispute was another story. Luke does not try to assess blame. He doesn't say who is right and who is wrong, and so we are left to answer that question for ourselves. Who was right in this situation? Well, I believe, along with many others, that both Paul and Barnabas were right. Paul was right. He had the mission in view. He was right that it was too soon for John to go on such a strenuous mission. John needed room and space and time to grow. But Barnabas, who had the man in view, was also right. He saw future promising possibilities which could be developed under his care. Possibilities that may not have developed in Paul's company for Mark. Mark, as one writer said, required time and a good mentor. Mark needed this time to be set apart to grow. William Barclay said this: "It may well have been the friendship of Barnabas which gave Mark back his self-respect and made him determined to make good. It is a great thing for a man to have someone who believes in him. Barnabas believed in Mark, and in the end, Mark justified that belief." In the Handbook to Leadership, the writer says this: "As Paul and Barnabas organized their second journey, John Mark signed back on, but Paul refused to take Mark with them, so Barnabas had a decision to make: go with the highly effective and rising star he had launched, or help another young champion whom others had written off. For Barnabas, the choice was simple. His career was marked by a refusal to abandon good people who needed sponsorship, encouragement, and development. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus and into obscurity." Tony Dungy, in the 1 Year Uncommon Life Daily Challenge, says this: "Make sure you're using your influence to help others see their limitless potential through Christ, what they can be, how they can grow, what they can do to impact others." John Maxwell says this: "Help people win by giving them opportunities, and you will win with them." Well, who was right? I think they were both right. Paul was right. Barnabas was right. Later, we read that Barnabas is mentioned positively in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 6 by Paul. Mark also is mentioned positively. We find him in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 10 in Rome with Paul. In Philemon chapter 24, Paul calls him a fellow worker. In 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 11, Paul writes, "Bring Mark. He is helpful to me." John Mark not only was helpful to Paul, but he ministered with Peter and ultimately wrote the Gospel of Mark. Well, good and godly people, Warren Wiersbe said, good and godly people in the church do disagree. This is one of the painful facts of life that we must accept. Paul looked at people and asked, what can they do for God's work? while Barnabas looked at people and asked, what can God's work do for them? Both questions are important to the Lord's work. Well, we see here God's training method. Disappointments are stepping stones to growth. Failure is a stepping stone to growth, to greater usefulness. We see this training method in the life of Moses as he spent 40 years in the desert. We see this training method in the life of David as he lived in the wilderness and ran from Saul. God takes our weaknesses. God takes our disappointments. God takes our failures, and he uses them for his glory and for his purposes. God uses our limitations. He uses our imperfections. He's not looking for perfect people. He is looking for willing people who will grow and be used by him. As one writer said, God uses people who are very, very human. Well, division in this case leads to multiplication. One mission becomes two. Tradition says that Barnabas had a great ministry in Cyprus, and from Cyprus, North Africa was reached. Paul selects Silas, and he is sent on his second missionary journey with the blessing of the church at Antioch, and the gospel reaches Europe. One writer explains, division between Christians can have disastrous results, but the Lord is able to use and often has used division to get his people to move in new directions which fulfill his goals. God is preparing us for greater usefulness. He's preparing us by using our weaknesses and disappointments and our failure, using them for his glory and his purposes. John Maxwell said this, problems either stop us or stretch us. Problems either hurt you or help you. Depending on how you approach them, they'll stop you from succeeding or stretch you so that you not only overcome them, but also become a better person in the process. The choice is yours. So let us today let God use our weaknesses. Let God use our disappointments. Let God use our failures for his glory, for his purposes, for failure is not fatal.